Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time Podcast. I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert, and we have a very special treat for everyone today. In honor of Mother's Day, Tim and I decided, you know what? What better thing to do than to do our movie reviews with none other than our moms themselves?
Yay!
And up first is the lovely, the talented, the beautiful, the smart, my mother, Phyllis Emmert.
Yay, Phyllis!
Thank you, Matt! Happy Mother's Day, everybody. It's so good to be here with Matt and Tim, and happy Mother's Day to Tim's mom and to all the other listeners' moms, and
yes,
everyone who's a mom. I'm ready.
Yes, Darlene Murdoch will be joining us next, but we always do reviews of two movies, so we thought we'll do the first with my mom, and we'll do the second with Tim's mom. And, you know, before we even get into it, Mom, I feel like you should tell our listeners, where did I get my intense love for horror?
I think it's definitely handed down my mother, who you can imagine, I'm up there in years, and my mother was like 80 or so when she passed. She likes scary movies, and I used to watch scary movies with her. She really liked that stuff, and I would watch them, and then I grew to like them, and I thought, wow, my kids should watch scary movies too. And from the time they were young, let's see, I remember when Matt was 4 or 5 years old, he watched Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Oh no.
This great story. Matt started to cry when Godzilla died at the end. He was like 4 or 5 years old, and he was like, I feel so sorry for Godzilla. And, you know, I thought that was an interesting way to go about it. But then I believe I don't know how old you guys were. I figured by the time you were 9 or 10, you were ready for a lot of stuff, maybe even 8.
I feel like, first off, I do remember for some reason feeling very sympathetic to Godzilla being killed.
You have empathy.
Yes, even though he had murdered tons of people. But I remember, that's so funny that I remember that. And then the first horror movie I remember watching, I was 8 and saw Silver Bullet, Stephen King's Silver Bullet.
Oh, that is such a great movie. One of my all-time favorites, Silver Bullet. Gary Busey, the best he ever did.
Tim's favorite actor, Gary Busey.
People say it's fun.
Really?
It's a great movie, man. I watch that. Anytime I see it on TV, I just click right to it. Right. In modern times, I think the werewolf is a bit cheesy now. But, you know, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was done very well.
Well, I was lucky enough to have a mom who embraced horror movies. And again, I tell the story all the time because since Halloween, the original is my favorite horror movie. The story of when I first saw it when I was 11 and came home from karate practice, and you said that there was a scary movie on, and we watched it together. I remember on KTLA Channel 5, it was the TV version of Halloween. First time I saw it, and that started my Halloween obsession.
You were 8?
Yeah.
11, yeah. 11 at that one, yeah.
11. Your sister claims that her first horror movie that I encourage her to watch was Devil Dog from Hell.
I remember her saying that, but I've never even heard of that. Have you heard of Devil Dog?
Oh, yes. You know, the crazy Hound from Hell story, your typical Hound from Hell.
Oh, you know, the typical.
You know, the typical.
Just your run-of-the-mill one. Well, but again, before we get into it, Mom, what would you, if you had to pick like a few of your favorite horror movies of all time, what would you pick?
Well, I think The Haunting of Hill House from 1960, 63, original in black and white with Juliet Harris, Claire Bloom, one of my favorite all-time actors, is one of the I think one of the absolute psychologically scary movies ever made. And I do believe it still stands up as a very creepy, scary movie. The remakes, no, horrible. This original one, great.
Yeah, I think it was just called The Haunting. It was based on Haunting of Hill House, but yes, you're right.
That's right. Original. It was based on The Haunting of Hill House. Yeah, it was called The Haunting. Okay.
Yes, that was, it is a great original. It's black and white. And then they redid it in, I guess it was 1999. Yeah, definitely probably not as good, but it was pretty successful. And then they had the series on was it Netflix? Yeah. Netflix? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yes. That was pretty different, though.
And what's your favorite slasher movie, Mom?
Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Oh man. See, I'm not as into the slasher gore as you are, Matt.
Wait a second. Not the gore part. Tim and I both just love slashers in general, where there is a masked killer and people are getting away. I don't need like the incredibly gory like effects of the torture.
I think the original Ring was quite scary. That still holds up pretty well. That's a real scary one. I remember Session 9. Is that what it was called?
It's like sci-fi.
Yeah, I go for that. Yeah, the straight. But in terms of slasher movies, I've seen them all. I don't know which my favorites are because I know what your favorite is. Of course,
I'm waiting, Mom. I'm waiting.
Yes, I enjoy those movies. I enjoy it because I do like Jamie Lee Curtis. And I do enjoy them. But, if I would be talking about it, I don't know if that would be among my most favorites. Like I say, my favorite psychological, scary, creepy ones.
But the good thing is my mom is always the type who's up for anything with horror. Anytime I visit, we look on demand and we search for whatever new horror releases are. And my sister is just as big into horror. And how about Dad? Is he into horror, Mom?
Not really. he's been a good guy all these years. And I remember the story when we were engaged, I think, or still dating. It was before we were married and I was at grad school at Penn State. And we went and I coerced him into seeing The Pit and the Pendulum with Vincent Price. Remember that old one? Not very horror type thing. I guess it would be considered. And it was mild, I thought. And we were in a packed house of students. And Dad, at the certain points, he screamed really loud. like a high voice. And I said, he practically jumped into my lap. But he was
And that's when you realize this is the man I'm going to marry.
This is the man I'm going to marry. I'm going to change him. And he's been very good. He goes to all of these movies. He really does. Sometimes he hates them. A lot of the times he hates them. But occasionally he'll come up and really enjoy stuff. So
he definitely does jump and scream more than any of us in our family, yes, which is funny. Does. But he is a trooper. He will sit
he's
through
been
the
a good sport. A and good sport.
And then he will say, "I can't believe you like this shit." Later,
yeah, he's
scared you.
Oh no, he's jumping because he's scared. Oh.
He's scared, or else he'll say, "That was the worst movie I've ever seen in my life." He said this many times, and I said, "But for the genre, Larry, for the genre, how do you think it was on a 1 to 10 scale?"
Then and he changed. Say a one. No. Well, with that, first off, thank you for answering our questions. As listeners can see, I definitely come from a family from generations, multi-generations.
Generations.
So the movie that we decided to discuss with my mom, it's a recently released movie on Netflix. Netflix doing a lot of its own content, which is great. It was just released at the very end of April called Things Heard and Seen. And it stars Amanda Seyfried, James Norton, F. Murray Abraham. What does that F stand for, Tim?
Oh, father.
Father, he's her relative. Father Murray Abraham. No, Natalia Dyer from Stranger Things. So it was a good cast. Amanda Seyfried's doing all types of stuff and always looking like she's 15 years old.
She looks great.
Yeah. But anyway, I guess. Before we even jump into it, Mom, you were interested in this. But what made you interested in this movie?
I thought it had a good cast. I figure if I like to, I'm a personal person. I like to, connect with somebody. So if I go to one of those old bad movies with no one I know, I don't enjoy it quite as much as when it's a really bad movie and someone I know. So I did connect with her. She was just recently nominated for an Oscar.
Yes.
Yes, a supporting Oscar in Mank. Yes.
Is it Mank or Mink?
You know, I...
No, Mank. Mankiewicz. His name is...
Oh, M-A-N-K, Mank.
Mankiewicz, yeah.
I am totally on top of the Oscar nominees.
I saw one film.
Yeah, I actually saw Mank. She was very good, but it was kind of a slow movie, but the acting was excellent.
Well, speaking of slow movies with good acting, things heard and seen, just to set the scene for people who don't know anything about it. Basically, Amanda plays, it takes place in 1980. Amanda plays a woman named Catherine, and she's married to George, her husband, who's James Norton, and they have a daughter named Franny. And basically, early in the film, he gets a job in upstate New York. They're living in Manhattan, and he gets a job to be a professor in upstate New York at like a small college, and they have to uproot their life and move, and they move into this big farmhouse in upstate New York. And right away, you know, well, okay, we know where this is going, moving into an old big scary house. What's this going to be about?
It's going to be about a lawyer.
A lawyer, what's up? You know, and so the first part of the movie, they're getting into the house, and at the very beginning you're thinking it's going to be like sort of your normal ghost story, because there's some creepy things going in the house that only her and her daughter see. I don't know if mom, did you catch that one scene where she's walking through, I think, the kitchen, and you see a flash of the woman's spirit like behind her? It's very quick.
Yes I did. And we all know that there was going to be things were going to happen to her. But, you know, at the very beginning, you know, they showed her throwing up also.
Oh, yes. Another thing which is always hard to watch is she has an eating disorder. Like, there's definitely things going on.
Well, you know, at first I thought she was pregnant, but then I immediately, no, she's not pregnant. She's throwing up. And can I throw this out? I know I'm kind of interrupting your...
No, go. There's no flow here.
I feel that issue of bulimia was never resolved in this movie.
No.
Not outwardly. Never. Here she is. She's puking her guts. She doesn't eat.
Yeah.
She's drinking. Tim, I thought she was really thin.
Yeah.
I mean, she must have lost weight for the movie. I thought she really looked extremely thin. Never face that. The husband would say, "Eat. You have to eat more. You have to eat more." And she would eat the insured drinks and then go in and throw it up.
Yeah, the protein shakes are when she had one piece of cake and then
one piece of cake and threw it up.
And the reason why
they never talked about it, other than him making note of it.
It's
well, the movie was concentrating on him being, well, we spoil the movie, but I thought the movie was, yes, there was the bulimia part, but I thought it was her way of dealing with her husband just being shady.
He was definitely, at the very beginning, it almost started where you would think they're like a happy couple. But of course, as it's moving on, you see how incredibly unsupportive he is, and he's not being supportive or sensitive to her needs. And, you know, eating disorders are very, it's a very sensitive topic. They obviously introduced it. There's not a lot of reasons that can cause it. I'm sure her home life caused it. You learn from the movie that she had to give up everything she ever wanted in life to follow whatever her husband wanted. And obviously, I'm sure that was maybe some of her anxiety of dealing with it. But you're right. They didn't really...
They didn't spell it out. You have to know that people with eating disorders are trying to gain control. And the only way that they can gain control is to gain control of their body. And they feel they're in control, but everything else is out of control. But they never explain that. Some people may not even, you know, I thought, why do you put it in the movie if you're not going to face it dead on? Why is it in the movie?
I'm thinking it's something that maybe she, again, it's like how her anxiety and depression manifested itself and something like that. But
I liked that she had an eating disorder.
You loved it.
I loved it. No, but I think it was another added layer to the movie in the sense that like everyone's working through something. And Phyllis, I want to know, did you think the leading guy was a handsome fellow?
That her husband?
Yes, James Norton.
I knew he was a schmuck from the get-go.
No. But did you think he was good looking?
In a certain way, yes.
You're not sounding very enthusiastic.
Well, you know, I thought the handyman kid was pretty cute.
He was definitely. Yeah, he was the forbidden love. But anyway, I should probably steer us back onto the plot because there's a lot.
Did you think George was really good looking?
I did until I found out how shady he was. Then I lost interest.
I think that's why I can't feel interest is because he was so horrible. So awful.
Well, I thought he was okay looking, but yes, as the movie went on, he becomes uglier and uglier.
Uglier and uglier, absolutely.
Right. So right away, like, the husband starts showing his true colors because he flirts with and then has an affair with a girl played by the Stranger Things girl, Natalia Dyer, who isn't one of his students, but is the age of one of his students. So, you know, no qualms about just going after her and having an affair. And all the while, Amanda Seyfried is noticing kind of like, you know, apparitions in her house, and her daughter is noticing it too. And she doesn't want to mention to her husband because she knows that he's going to think it's ridiculous. But there is one character that doesn't think it's ridiculous, and it's her husband's, he's a professor, and it's like, I guess F. Murray Abraham plays the department head named Floyd, and he is very much into like supernatural and spirits and stuff. In fact, George invites him over for dinner one night, and him and Amanda Seyfried bond because he can tell there's a spirit in their house. What did you think of that scene where he tells Amanda Seyfried there is a spirit in the house, but it's a welcoming spirit that's there to help you?
Okay, what I thought about that character at the beginning was the dean, we'll call him the dean, and at the beginning, when he's welcoming George to the staff of the little college, he's talking about, you know, his little group, and they say they follow the writings of some Swedish guy that wrote a book called Between Heaven and Hell. What was his name? Helgendor?
It was like Swedenborg.
Swedenborg, something like that. And I immediately thought, this guy's going to be trouble, but I was totally wrong on him. He wasn't trouble at all. He actually was sincere in this little group. It was mostly older people, though, that they had that followed his teachings, only that if there's evil, it's because you are evil, and that there's some kind of a segue between the afterlife and that kind of thing. And she starts to fall for that, but I would be very, you know, like I would think, okay, you know, but when he comes to the house and he feels the spirit. You should explain more, I guess, the spirit, how that plays into it. There's somebody haunting the house.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. She finds out that her house has a lot of history. First off, she finds like an old Bible with like family trees of all the people that have lived there.
A ring.
Yeah, there's the word damned is written next to a lot of the women's names. Then she finds a ring that was worn by the previous owners, who she finds out it was a man and a woman, a couple, and their two kids. And apparently the man slipped the wife and the kids sedatives and then turned on cars in the garage to let the carbon monoxide come in to try to kill all of them, including himself. Only he and the wife died, but the two kids that survived now live down the road and are the kids that are doing the yard work for Amanda Seyfried and her husband.
And you forgot, Matt, he also shot each of their 40 to 60 cows.
What was the significance of that? Did he really?
I don't know, but they mention it, and that sounds pretty horrible to me. So
yes, and so you find out that the spirit that's staying around in the house that's there to help Amanda Seyfried is the wife who was killed by her husband before. So right away, I feel like that's when I was realizing, okay, is this almost like Amityville Horror, where it's like whatever the crime that happened in the past, they're going to possess them? You know, so I was thinking, is the killing male going to possess her husband to try to kill her? Is the wife watching over? I was like, is this a history repeats itself? Is it coming over? But you're right. They find out that it's the spirits of the women in the house. And apparently a lot of them were either murdered by the men or something. But there's like a very long background to the house. But I also thought it was very peculiar that the kids who survived want to come back to this house, help them with yard work and babysit.
Right.
Yeah. There's this underlying feminist tone, I guess.
Yes, definitely. The men were
And I kind of, the men were particularly violent, and I kind of feel maybe George, the husband, maybe the house brought that out for him, brought it out more. You know, like what did Amanda see in this guy when they were in college? I mean, or did he just become evil?
So this is what I'm saying. As the movie goes on, you learn just how devious her husband is. And so I partly agree that the house brought out even the worst in him, but you find out he had a cousin who was gay, and they were friends. And you first hear that the cousin died in a sailing accident, drowned, and he was a great artist and amazing. Then you kind of put it together that I think George actually murdered the cousin, because not only did he steal the cousin's paintings and put them off as his own to his wife, but this started this whole, like, I guess, routine in George's life where if he couldn't achieve something, he'd just lie his way into it. Yeah. You find out that the teaching job he got that they moved for, he forged the letter of recommendation to get the teaching job. So that was all false and fraudulent. So you're starting to see he's having an affair. He probably killed his cousin. He's lying to get teaching jobs. And Amanda Seyfried's just learning this slowly as it goes on.
How could she not? She's been with the guy for like 10 years or more, right? How could she not know the side of him?
I will say, I think he played the part well as the very overly charming person that has this awful dark side to him.
Yes. Yeah, he was good. I mean, I hated him.
Oh, yes, he got worse and worse. So, but then even pushing it forward more, the dean, F. Murray Abraham, finds out about the forged letter and says that he's going to have to basically report him to HR, and he's going to lose his job, and goes out.
Wait a minute. You're forgetting what she finds out from the realtor.
Yes, that was the best scene in the movie.
She finds from the realtor do you know who that realtor was, Mom, the actress?
She looked familiar, but I don't know.
I'll give you a hint. Harrison Ford.
No, she was in Raiders of the Last Ark. Raiders of the Last Ark, not the first Ark. She was in Raiders
That couldn't be Nancy Allen.
It was Karen Allen.
Karen Allen, that's who I mean. What happened to her?
Well, I don't know, but it's she looks like Margot Kidder, and I know RIP Margot Kidder, but I just, when I saw her, I was like, oh my God, she looks like Margot Kidder, but yeah, she's not.
Right, because Margot Kidder
put on some weight now, but she's an older woman. She looks different.
Yeah, she did look different, but the real... Well, I already said Amanda Seyfried finds out her husband knew about the murder-suicide that I explained in the house. And she finds out that the two, I don't want to say kids, because one of them is obviously like 19 or 20 or something,
right,
that are doing the housework are the kids that survived that murder-suicide. But all of this, her husband knew and kept from her.
Right. Now that is terrible. Can you imagine that? You get a house, you make the woman give up. Or the woman gives up her career, and then he keeps secrets. Secrets are the worst thing.
I agree.
What did, Mom, what would you do if you moved into a new house and then found out that dad knew about a murder-suicide and didn't tell you about it?
Are you kidding? I would pack my bags and leave. That's what I would do. I always think about that in houses. So tell me, to the realtor, was there a serial killing here? Was this a meth lab? You know me, Matt. I always think that they have to, by law, tell the people who are buying or renting
Speaking of how recent that was, when Jacob and I moved into the house that we just moved into, my mom said, are you sure there were any crimes committed there? My mom Googled the address. Yep.
Listen, always, maybe that's part of the thing with horror that I have this thing with. I always think about stuff like that. No, it's better to check before you move in than find out after you move in.
When you're haunted.
That is true. Yeah. So as we move further on into the movie, we also forgot one character who is another teacher at the university named Justine, who he becomes friends with Amanda Seyfried and is very suspicious of George, her husband. Mm-hmm. And right. Basically, I was talking about how the department head is about to report him for finding out about the forged letter, goes sailing with him, which if you're about to report someone, don't go sailing one-on-one with them.
That was one of my questions. Why did the dean say, sure, let's go, sure, come in and let's go sailing? Because he never could imagine that somebody would be so evil and horrible. That's
the thing. I think he thought he'd already been over to their house. They were going to be friends, even if he had to do his duty to get him fired. But, oh, no, bad mistake, because George ends up drowning him and killing him.
They didn't show it, but we knew it.
He walks away dripping wet, and then they hear that they found his body. And Justine, the other teacher, sees him walking away dripping wet and knows something's off. So what does George do? He decides to run her off the road.
As one.
I mean, it just keeps building and building. He's just doing work. Like, he's digging himself such a hole, and he's becoming even more despicable. Runs her off the road. She's in a coma, and you're thinking, well, if she wakes up, she could tell everyone that he did this, but she's in a coma.
Guess what?
What?
She wakes up.
Oh, yes. But that's after what I hated, because we really loved Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah, I was shocked about the next scene. Yeah.
So Amanda Seyfried knows, can feel, finds out that he's having an affair, hears about the dean's body being found, and knows that he had been wet coming home that day. Basically, he returns home. She calls him out on it. He gives her her protein shake. Here's note to people. If you're calling someone out on murder, don't drink something that they've given to you.
Give you, yeah.
She drinks the protein shake. And what's in the protein shake, Tim?
Poison.
Well, it's actually a sedative or something. Yeah, that like
sleepy.
Roofies? Right.
Probably a lot of Ambien or something.
Something. She passes out and he axes her to death.
That is true.
What did you think of that scene, Mom?
I thought, first of all, she was outside and she started feeling the effects of whatever the sedative was. And she managed to get in. Did she have any help from the ghost spirit to get inside the house? So.
Not
at all. She just managed to get her way in. And but she's still all in daisy from the sedative. And then he comes in and I couldn't believe that he did that.
I was shocked too, because I thought, why aren't the spirits helping with that? Like,
why are they waiting till afterwards?
Yeah, I was like, what help are they if they're going to let her be axed to death unconscious? And I was just like, you doing anything?
The beginning of the movie, the first like 3 minutes make it like, you know, someone dies. So
yeah, and then we forgot to say in the very beginning of the scene, at the very beginning of the movie, it starts where the husband comes home and sees blood dripping and the daughter's there. So you know, I had a feeling the wife may get killed at some point, but
which is a bummer.
I didn't know that he was going to be the killer. Yeah. It was a bummer because you really love Amanda Seyfried's character. She's the good guy in this, but what happens after that is obviously her spirit joins the other spirits of the women who've been murdered in the house.
Yeah, and something that I thought was my personal feeling about the end of this movie is that it really went from being pretty entertaining into a disappointment for me. I mean, they show the two women there, go standing there as he's going mad, essentially. He's going mad. And I found that to be really too much.
Well, that's the thing. And just to explain the ending, the two spirits are able to wake Justine up from her coma. She calls George, basically says that she remembers everything. So George knows the jig is up. He's going to be reported. He's going to be, you know, get found guilty of murdering all these people. So he goes on a sailing trip. And then
I guess I'll go on a sailing trip. What was his motive to do that? Where was he on his way? It was the Hudson River.
I think it was suicide, right?
I thought it might have been suicide I had no idea. I didn't know if he wanted to go out like his cousin did, you know, in the sailing accident.
The guy said, hey, I can't let you go out, and he's like, here's some money, and he was like
he bribed the boat guy to go out.
Here's where it got very abstract and almost like religious, which always is not, I'm not a big fan of. Where he suddenly, the spirits turn his like sailing expedition into like opening the gates of hell, and he kind of morphs into the painting that is on the book that the dean was showing them, which is like supposed to, I guess, stand for the gates between life and hell, and it's like
heaven and hell. Yeah.
his sailing scene like literally freezes into fire and he's like going into hell.
I thought I wanted to see him in jail, not in heaven. Yes. Hell.
I know. Did you notice the upside down cross?
Yes. And it was all.
Talk about being obvious, right? You know, when you're going to heaven, the cross is straight up and all that. And there it was, the scene with the upside down cross. You knew that he was headed into hell. And all of a sudden, the placid Hudson River sailing becomes a storm. It just whips up and you see he's headed into the painting, actually, which is of hell. And I just was so disappointed. I just turned to Larry and said, man, they wrapped this up too fast. This was just all, I just didn't feel that it was a proper ending. And then the two women who are there.
The Ghost Women Society.
Wearing all white.
To me, it started out with a lot of potential and it was entertaining. And then it just descended into disappointment. And essentially it became very cheesy, I thought.
What did you think, Tim, overall?
I agree with your mom 100%. I thought the first hour was great. And the second hour, I thought it was going to lead. I wanted to see him get his comeuppance, and I didn't get it.
I have another thing, another interjection. Why did she, I could understand that she wanted to have sex with Eddie, but on the ground in
the middle of the day?
That was
her daughter? Eddie sex was on the ground.
Eddie was one of the kids, was not a kid, who survived and was doing housework and babysitting. And he's like a hot, probably 19, 20-year-old. I think that was just meant to say, like, she probably hadn't had sex with her own husband in a long time. So she was just going to take it wherever she could.
I feel funny.
Well, nothing like talking about sex with your mother. No, I was going to just say.
They could have walked into the house, but I guess
there's no time.
I love, Mom, how that's what you picked apart. Why did they have sex on the ground?
Come on. They just fall on, they're on the ground in the dirt. Come on.
You know what? Don't knock it till you try it.
Ew. Hey, I understand. Trust me, I understand. But, I don't know. I just felt that she could have taken his hand and gone in the barn, maybe. Or anyway.
Like in the middle of nowhere.
I think it was the heat of the moment. But look, I just love talking about this with my mom. No. I was going to just say, though, I do think I agree with everyone's assessment. I will say this. I was definitely entertained for the first hour, but I remember looking over to Tim and saying, you know, not a lot's actually happened. Again, I was entertained, but when you think about the first hour of the movie, it could have been just a family drama. Like, there are really a couple scenes of a ghost and that was it. Then the end, you know, it gets into almost like a really like a exaggerated Lifetime movie with, you know, the cheating, a killing husband. But then when it got to the end and it became all religious and like metaphors for the paintings and heaven and hell, I was like, this is beyond me. I can't do
it. And here's another thing. At the very beginning of the movie, when he's driving home and he sees blood dripping, he's seen carrying his daughter out. That's how the movie opened. Didn't he carry arms? And then it switched to the movie started. What happened to the girl?
I mean, I would think if the mom's dead and he went to hell, she's going to be living with Justine.
Yeah.
Is he alive? He carried her out. Did he decide to save her? He wasn't exactly an ideal father either.
I didn't get nasty. I didn't gather that she died.
I didn't gather that he killed her, but who knows? I mean, the truth is this movie was based on a novel called All Things Seas Do Appear by Elizabeth Brundage. Apparently it's like a over 400 page novel.
Ew.
I'm sure there was, damn it. I'm sure there was tons more that happened in the novel. And I'm sure it was really tough to get all this into a 2-hour movie. And it was 2 hours, long running.
What was the name of it? I got to write this title down. It's funny. I do like long novels.
I know. It's a long novel called
All
Things Seas to Appear by Elizabeth Brundage. And, you know, it was turned into this movie. Again, I thought the performances were good. I thought James Norton did a great job as charming but dark husband. Amanda Seyfried is always good. F. Murray Abraham was good.
I like when the husband got home and took off all his wet clothes.
You mean the butt shot near the laundry machine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing like seeing your husband come home and take off. Mom, if you saw dad randomly come home in the middle of the night, strip off all his clothes to put in a washer dryer, would you be suspicious?
I think I would be, yes. But here's my favorite cheesy line. When are the women of that house going to get justice? When will justice come for the women of that house? That's what Justine said, I think.
Yeah.
Well, it is true, because as much as I know it's supposed to end in this, you know, the women spirits bonded together to, you know, send the husband to hell, they all died. So yeah, that sucks. You know, like, I mean, why couldn't, again, I wish they could have saved.
It's not a happy ending.
It's not happy. It's bittersweet. And I feel like the women didn't get all the justice they needed, because Amanda Seyfried still died. All the women still were murdered.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I felt that it was, who directed this movie or something? Was it a woman or a man?
I think, I'm not sure. It was, directed by Sherry Springer Berman and Robert Polcini.
Okay.
I just felt that and let's face it, I'm a real feminist too. I would want, you know, I hate violent men and stuff like that, but it was, I thought that they made this whole statement about it. Maybe it was too much or something, that all the men in the house were all these violent abusers and stuff. You know, what are they trying to say? That men commit most of the crime in this country? Oops, that's right. Like that. I don't, you know, they kind of focused on the male thing.
It definitely was. And there is, I'm sure, I mean, well, we know that it's a fact that there are many men that commit crimes against their wives. And they get away with things like this. This was definitely written as a way for kind of women, but I think it was written not just women kind of getting revenge on their husbands, but also with the idea of, like, you can still get revenge through the afterlife and with heaven and hell as part of it. And I think that's where it's like, you have to really believe in all of this stuff to really think like this can happen. So it was, what was tough, but also I guess unique about this movie, is that it wasn't just a straight up ghost story. It also wasn't just a straight up, you know, man taking, you know, killing people and woman getting revenge movie. It was kind of like a blending of all of that, you know?
But the revenge, what revenge? They're dead. I don't consider it like a real revenge movie, but there was one thing that F. Murray Abraham said, death is just the beginning. Death is just the beginning. No, not the way I feel about that.
Yes, and that's why I was saying you have to really believe in an afterlife and all of this that they're talking about to think that these women are going to get to be happy in heaven while he burns in hell. If you don't believe that, then you're shit out of luck.
I think they're really would be happy in heaven.
Happy in heaven.
Mm-hmm. They're really trying to throw a lot of stuff at you, among the religious thing, the violence, the women, a little too much. It was just a little too much. I don't, you know, well, was this some kind of a religious movie or something?
Definitely religious undertones. I would say I recommend it for people who probably aren't your mainstream horror fans that are looking for, you know, I want killing and a survivor and this. People who like more of a dramatic film, people who like these religious undertones, people who like a longer.
Right. And there's a big audience for that. This is not a horror movie per se. I would say it's not really a horror movie. It wasn't really, to me, scary. I'm sure some people would find it scary, but.
It had moments, but I think what was more scary was the character of the husband.
Yeah, the husband was just a terrible man. Let's talk about the husband.
He was a frightening, horrible man.
He was. But again, I think, and Tim, I've talked about this before, the most frightening characters, the ones that come off as sweet and nice and deep down are evil. The ones who are outwardly evil, yes, they're scary, but at least, you know, all cards are on the table.
You know where you stand.
Yeah. Anyway, well look, this
isn't it. Wait a minute. I have one more comment. Isn't it like all of these mass murders and stuff, and everybody always says he was such a nice guy, you know, he was such a good neighbor, and then all of a sudden he goes out and kills dozens of people. All of them seem to be nice to outwardly to a lot of people.
Which is why I love Michael Myers, because nobody says that he's outwardly nice to people. They know he's evil from the beginning.
You know evil's there.
Yeah, exactly. There's no joke in there. No, but you're right. People said that about Ted Bundy. People said that about, I think, Jeffrey Dahmer. People said that. No, I don't know if anybody said about the Night Stalker. I think no, they all knew he was horrible. Gross. Ted Bundy, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well,
I enjoyed myself watching it.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was good. I'm not saying it was bad. It was interesting. It was a lot all in one movie. And the religious stuff, it takes me out of it a little bit. But again, that's just me. So
it was very professionally done, much slicker than some of these B horror movies that we've watched in the past. So it was done really well. And I might add, the last note is that area that they were in is literally the area where we're looking possibly to get a country home.
Well, I heard there's one available. There's an old Bible in it.
Yes, that's true. That area, you know, is a big place for people in New York City to go and get their little, you know, country homes if you want to go for the weekend.
My parents and my sister and brother-in-law and nephew all live in Manhattan, and they're looking to go in on a house together in upstate New York. So, you know, I hear, Mom, that you can get a great deal on that house or Amityville, New York, I heard. Amityville, New York.
Oh, you know, I once took my mother to that house in Amityville. See, to show you how she really liked that, one of my trips when she was still alive so many years ago, because we lived in Long Island. We lived on the North Shore. That house was on the South Shore. I purposely took the car and I told my mother, we're going to Amityville and take a look at the haunted house there. And we did.
I never knew that.
We went to the actual house because I was able to look up in those days in the library and got the actual address of the house. And people actually were living there. You know, it's actually a pretty nice house and area there, so
I'm sure they got a great deal on it.
I'm sure they did.
Well, I think that that's a beautiful area, and just make sure you ask about the history of the house before you purchase it.
Yeah.
Well, and also I think this tends to happen in houses that were built like in the 19th century, and they say, oh yeah, this was first built in 1844 and it's been renovated a number of times. Those are the houses you really got to look for.
It's because
they have all of those people that used to live there, and all kinds of weird stuff happens.
And with that, Mom, I just want to thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Yeah, thank you.
You were great talking about this movie. We really enjoyed talking about it with you. I hope you enjoyed too.
I enjoyed it. You know, I love talking about horror movies. I love it. And I could talk on and on. And now you can see Matt is my son, right? You can tell. We're related. He talks. I talk. We love horror. What else is there?
We never stop talking. That's why I'm always talking. We are a talkative family.
Loud talkative family.
Loud talkative family. Yes. Anyway, Mom, thank you so much. You're a gem. You're amazing.
Yes, thank you.
And happy Mother's Day, Mom. We love you. And I will,
I love you, Matt. And I love you, Tim. Your mom, Tim.
Yes, we will be up next with Darlene Murdoch for our next movie. Thanks so much, right. Mom. Phyllis Emmert, everybody.
Okay, everybody, have a great Mother's Day. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And so for our second movie, we watched the movie Separation, but this one is playing in the theaters. So Matt and I went to the movies, and my mom and my Aunt Patsy went to the movies, and they saw Separation. So I want to give a warm welcome to my mom, Darlene Murdoch.
Hi, Darlene. Well, first off, happy Mother's Day.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
What was it like? You know, I've always been wondering, because we were talking to my mom about what it was like with me being so into horror growing up. But what was Tim like growing up?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, he had the whole neighborhood, and I bought him a camera. And in the backyard, we had all kinds of movies going on day and night, night and day.
All horror movies?
Yes.
Well, I always wonder, because like my mom loves horror, so I feel like I got it from her. But are you a big horror fan?
Yes,
you are.
I like it to scare me, you know, but Friday the 13th was rough.
And Kim, how about your brothers? Are they into horror like you?
Trevor is, Jamie, not so much. No. I mean, they'll watch it, but it's not really their thing.
True.
And your dad, does he like horror?
He'll watch it, but it's not his thing.
He's sports.
Yeah, you know what? That's the thing. My dad does not like horror, but he will do it just to like go with the rest of the family because he's just like, I'm overruled. It's always my mom, my sister, and me that want horror and everything. Yep. So then what was it like going to the movie? Was this the first movie you'd seen in a theater since the pandemic started?
Yes.
Was it fully packed? Because I know this was such
a... No. We were there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, of course. So, I mean, because Patsy and I don't want to go to a horror movie later when it's dark. Because we were afraid.
You're right.
But so it was Patsy and I in the theater, and this guy was in the back of us. And we freaked out because we thought, is he going to kill us?
Was he was by himself?
Yes.
Oh, I will say it is a little weird. Like, look, I'm all proponent of if you want to see a movie by yourself, seeing a horror movie by yourself, that's maybe a little weird.
I don't know. But anyway, we were sitting there alone. And then all of a sudden he comes in and goes, because we were talking about the movie. And he's going, like that.
Oh, so he was one of those keep silent, don't ruin the movie type things. Don't worry, Tim and I talk during movies all the time.
Yeah. So, but we thought we were alone for so long. And then all of a sudden he's going, like that.
Oh, wow. Well, so to set up this movie for our listeners, the trailer looked pretty scary because it stars Rupert Friend from Homeland. If anybody watches Homeland, you'll recognize him. He was in for a bunch of seasons. And he's the father of a young girl, and he kind of has a very bad relationship with his wife at the time, who's working full time while he is just kind of doing some art. And I guess he is unemployed and never really went after an opportunity to, he could have had like a TV show drawing puppets, and he draws all these scary puppets. First off, what did you think of all the scary puppets that he drew?
Not scary. I really didn't think they were scary.
It's funny. It's funny. When Tim and I were watching this movie, the first thing was like, it kind of starts, and for a long time, nothing is really going on other than just family drama. Remember that, Tim?
My mom took notes. Mom, do you want to do your summary?
Oh, please. Oh, wow. Please tell us your summary. It's probably a lot better than mine can be.
I don't know about that. I thought you were just going to ask me questions. I just wrote down stuff because I'm a teacher or ex-teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I had to, you know, have my lesson plan. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Well, then, yeah. Well, I mean, we can go through it, or if you want to give us your summary, however you want.
Well, here's the thing. I wrote this. It starts off with a little girl is up in her attic playing with these scary dolls, like things. Okay. And then her dad and the babysitter are downstairs talking about what he's done in the past. And I'm thinking, if she's the babysitter, how come she's not there at, like, babysitting?
Because she's got the hots for him, Mom.
As a mom, I would say, no, not a good babysitter.
Well, that's the thing. Right from the beginning, it's a good point, Darlene, because right from the beginning, you notice that there's a weird relationship between the babysitter and the father. And by the way, the babysitter is played by Madeline Brewer, who is famous for playing Janine on The Handmaid's Tale. I immediately recognized her watching The Handmaid's Tale. So, you know, she has the eye patch in The Handmaid's Tale. So it was nice to see her with two eyes. But right. She obviously has the hots for the dad, and nobody is watching the kid. You're totally right. And doesn't she has an accident, right? She falls.
Yeah.
Oh, but come on. First of all, she's on all these boxes, right? And then this bird hits the window, and all of a sudden she's on this rafter. How in the heck did she get on the rafter? She's a little girl. No. You know,
maybe the puppets helped her.
Okay. And then also when she hits, you'd think she would break a limb, but no, she only has a bump on her head. What?
That is a good point. Good observation. But the best part is after this, the mom comes home and just like you're saying, is like, oh, why was no one watching her? She gets in this big fight with the dad and it switches to they're getting a divorce.
Yes.
And they have this really uncomfortable mediation meeting where she wants full custody and her father is there with her. And they're saying basically the dad is a deadbeat. He hasn't had a job and he shouldn't have.
Well, 3 years. Come on.
I mean, they're not that far off. Am I right?
I mean, yeah.
You know, and it's funny, the movie makes the mom seem like such like a harsh person, but really I feel like any parent in that situation would probably feel the same.
I know, but she was mean. She didn't have to be that mean.
She was pretty harsh, but then we flip to the big shocker of it, and I want your opinion on how shocked you were by this moment. They're talking on the phone, the mom and the dad, and the mom is basically talking about how the dad is screwing up again and she's going to be fighting for full custody and she's going to be moving with the daughter to Seattle. And she's on the phone walking through the streets. And Tim, what were you thinking when she was walking through the streets on the phone?
This was my favorite scene in the movie because we all knew it was going to be a Meet Joe Black situation where she gets bashed by a car. But my mom and my Aunt Patsy, what did you think?
We knew it's going to be the babysitter. Sorry.
Oh,
my mom just gave it. It's what are you talking about? We're talking about when she's walking on the phone in the street.
But okay. So we knew it was going to be her, but also we jerked when that car hit her. I mean, we were like, whoa.
Do you mean jumped?
Jerked or jumped.
Wait, Tim, if you move the mic just a tiny bit closer to you, so then it'll be like perfect between you guys. Yeah, okay, perfect. Sorry. By the way, for our listeners, what's even more special about this is that we're not just talking to Darlene. Tim is in person and surprised his mom for Mother's Day.
So, surprise!
Yeah, so he surprised her. And speaking of surprises, yes, it was a jerk moment when the car suddenly slams through the streets and knocks over the mom and kills her. But here's the thing. Again, anyone who's seen a horror movie and you're seeing someone on a phone in the street, I mean, I don't know how many movies I've seen where there's someone's on a phone in the street and gets hit by a car. So, yes. So,
I've seen a lot.
You know it's going to happen. Yeah. So the mom is dead now, and the daughter is now in the custody of the father, Rupert Friend, except the grandfather, as in the mom's dad, is still fighting for custody. So this is when it starts to try to be scary, the movie, but I feel like it kind of fails miserably. Suddenly, the dad starts having dreams of some of his puppet figures alive, and the daughter starts seeing one figure in particular. It looks like one of the puppets, but it also looks a little bit like her mom. And it keeps talking to her. But here's what didn't make sense, and I wanted to get your guys' opinion. You later learn through the movie, obviously, that the puppet figure that looks sort of like the mom is the mom's spirit actually communicating with the daughter. But the really creepy contortionist puppet that the dad dreams about, who is that? And did they just put that in there as a scary scene that makes no sense?
Well, I think personally it was a tag on, and I don't think it was like made strictly for the trailer, strictly to get people into the seats, and which they filled. But mom, what do you think?
I think he needed a job.
The contortionist?
Yes.
You know, what's funny is that I read that's an actual contortionist. So that wasn't like, I mean, obviously I'm sure.
I know.
Sound effects and things. Obviously he's not breaking bones, but I will say that's probably the creepiest scene of the movie, but like Tim said, it doesn't have anything to do with the plot, because if the mom is the one haunting them, who is this creepy guy and why did they put it in the movie?
I know. And when it comes and it opens his mouth, it's like, how come?
And do you notice he really doesn't make an appearance again until the ending, just so they can have like a final scare? Like, you know what I mean? It's just like it, like Tim said, it was totally tagged on so they could have a really creepy scene in the trailer.
Yeah.
So as we move forward in the movie, the daughter starts communicating with the ghost of the mom as a puppet, and the babysitter starts to also see kind of weird things and see the ghost. And the dad is working at a, I guess, a comic book a place, or he's...
Yes, he was only supposed to be an inker, but then they give him like a whole storyline.
Because he starts... Sorry, go on.
No, which is like he's using his own life to sell comics? I don't know.
He's drawing really weird, creepy drawings because I guess he's being like in weird trances, taken over by these spirits or whatever. And did you guys notice how every time he was like in a trance, they had to make the screen red? Like we wouldn't know.
That was clever.
I thought that was good. Yeah.
I guess I just felt like it was like, okay, I kind of get that he's sort of in a trance, but they made the whole screen like red, but he's drawing all these creepy things.
I kind of needed it.
Actually. Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, then it was helpful.
It was helpful for me. It's helpful for, but maybe not for you guys.
How about for Aunt Patsy? Did she like the red screens?
She is not a horror film girl. No.
Was she ready to walk out during this movie?
No, she said it's not that scary. So.
That's the thing. It had all the, I guess, the elements of what it could be scary, but it was just the way they did it. It just really ended up.
But nobody died.
Yeah, that's that's another thing.
Well, I know, but I mean, it wasn't a lot of blood and guts.
No, it wasn't. And there wasn't, other than that scene with the contortionist, there wasn't a lot of scary stuff. So as we move forward in the movie, you know, the babysitter starts seeing the ghost that looks like the mom and is explaining it. And the dad, Rupert Friend, starts hearing from one of the guys at his comic book store that, or at his comic book place, that, you know, spirits, when they're unhappy, can stick around in bad places. Like, we haven't heard that before, you know, in every movie.
The Grudge.
Exactly. And so you understand that this spirit that looks like a puppet is a mom. So I have a question for you. If the mom hated the dad so much, would she really want to come back at looking like one of the puppets that he drew?
I wouldn't think so.
It was, I mean, so many things. I mean, the nanny and the dad never got together. There was no affair.
Yes, yeah, she tried to kiss him. Janine from The Handmaid's Tale. We'll just
call her. No!
She tries to kiss him.
That? Wait, one more time?
No, get out.
And also you notice that she does start doing weird. So here's the thing. There's a subplot in this movie that the grandfather is investigating who the hit and run person who killed the mom, because he says, you know, the car didn't even stop. So it wasn't an accident. It was murder. So right away, I've got to ask you, Darlene, you said you knew it was the babysitter the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, who else could it be? There isn't that many characters.
That's a good point. And obviously it wasn't Rupert Friend because he was on the phone with her at the time. And who else would be the killer? Now, Tim and I felt the same way, didn't we? We kind of knew it was the babysitter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, apparently my mom guessed within the first 5 minutes. It took me a little longer. I mean, but...
Darlene's like, I got it. Babysitter, goodbye, I'm out.
A lot of babysitters, you know.
Well, what I love in this movie is there's one scene where they say that the daughter is allergic to peanuts. And this was the biggest thing. Like, the babysitter is preparing a meal for them. And then the daughter like goes into like anaphylactic shock. Yeah. And she said, oh my God, there must've been peanuts or something. Like, she wouldn't know. Like, if you're caring for a kid who has a peanut allergy, you'd be looking at that all the time.
Yes.
Well, I mean, she already got the wife out of the way. She just needs the daughter out of the way, then she can get her man.
It's so funny because it's just like the idea that, wow, you're going to like mow down a woman and kill a kid just to like get the man of your dreams.
No,
I would do it.
Hey, he was divorced. I mean,
yeah. Like, how about just
getting a divorce?
Yeah, he was getting a divorce anyway. He was available. But anyway, we get to a part where the only time someone is in danger is the mom spirit as a puppet. Like, there's a scene where she, I guess, is sort of pulling the sheets over the babysitter to scare her. But again, yeah, I'm
you
like,
had comments on this.
Oh, please tell me.
What did you think of the teenager? I'm sorry, not teenager, the babysitter. In the bed. What did you tell me?
I don't know why she was in their bed. I mean, truthfully, that was weird.
I
elaborate.
No, I 100% agree, but please elaborate.
I can't elaborate. I just know that I just would not be in that bed. That's all I know.
Well, but the best part is that she had already been seeing ghosts and the spirit. So why would she be staying in that bed there to relax after there's the whole thing with the little girl almost dying from the peanuts and stuff. And I think she hits her head and she needs to go and lay down. But yeah, I'd be like
on the chandelier.
Oh,
the chandelier was pushed into her head. Remember?
Yes. Yes, that's true. So, of course, she needs to relax. So where is she going to relax? In the home where the spirit is haunting her.
No.
Didn't make sense. But the mom, again, and I was like, was this a movie R? I feel like it's got to be PG-13, right?
I think it was R.
Oh, no, it was R. What made it R? There was no violence. There was no sex. And there was no...
There was one thing. I mean, when the babysitter pushes the old man down those stairs, and let me just tell you, he would not survive. I'm about his age. And if I fell down those stairs, there's no way I'm going to live through that.
That is a good
Especially, thing. Did you see his body at the end?
Yes, it was contorted like the contortionist.
I mean, no, he's not alive.
Well, and so they were getting to the point where the old man or the woman who was hit by the hit and run, her father, the grandfather, finds out that the person who mowed her down and killed his daughter is the babysitter, and he's going to confront her, and she pushes him down the stairs. But like you said, he miraculously survives, and Rupert Friend is going to confront her. And it's the big climax at the end where the mom, as the puppet, finally kills the babysitter by, I think, what does she do? Like push something
to her. She takes a piece of glass and she makes her slit her own throat, right?
Yeah, but they don't show it that much, right? Like,
it's real quick. It's super. Maybe that's why it's rated R. It's super, super quick.
Is that the only, other than the hit and run, is that the only death, I think?
Because remember, the dad and the little girl fall out the window and they were hit the pavement and all of a sudden they're alive.
Yes, yes. The very ending scene. The mom, as this puppet spirit, is like taking the daughter out the window, like trying to coax her, I guess, to die, to be with her. And the dad is like begging her, no, you know, don't do this. And then the dad jumps out the window to try to save her. And they're both falling in this weird slow-mo scene. And then suddenly they wake up on the pavement, completely fine. No bruises, no broken
bones. They're sitting on the step waiting for the ambulance. Now, how are they going to explain the death?
You mean that the babysitter, I guess the
upstairs with the glass in her neck.
Yeah, exactly. The babysitter, they're going to say she slit her throat. That's not going to go over well.
No. Jail time.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking, I can't even believe we're even trying to think this because the movie obviously didn't think it through. But I guess maybe they'll say we confronted her because we found out she murdered my wife and then she just slit her own throat. But I don't know many people kill themselves by slitting their own throats.
They're not going to buy it.
Right.
But more importantly, how did the dad and the daughter survive that fall with no scratches?
Magic.
There were a lot of plot holes in this. And I think you hit it on the head, Darlene, when you said it just wasn't that scary.
No, because I mean, like Friday the 13th and stuff like that, that's scary to me. And the masks, those are scary. You know, when you have a mask on,
yeah,
and all of a sudden you're coming after with a knife. Ooh, that's scary to me.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's under that mask.
Yes. And sometimes maybe it's a sexy killer, Tim.
Yeah, that's right. Fernando.
You know what I found out about this movie? The director of the movie also did, Tim, you're going to love this, The Boy and Brahms The Boy Too.
Oh, wow. Two very slow films.
Yeah. But
they're entertaining.
Mom,
have you seen The Boy?
No. I just was talking about the one I saw.
Oh, Separation. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
it was entertaining because at least Patsy could sleep at night. Thank God.
Well, that's the thing. If two people like you and Patsy can go to see a horror movie and you don't see them that often and you're not that scared, then that movie really didn't succeed in being scary, you know?
No.
But did you think overall, Mom, it had a good story? I mean, were you interested in the life of the dad and like the babysitter and wife triangle?
Pause.
Well, there you go, Matt.
I think we have our answer. That means a big no, I think. No, you know what?
I didn't want to say no, but...
You can. Speak your mind.
Oh, no, no.
No, I was bored with that. I mean, it's been used so much. The babysitter, the dad, you know, and she comes home and all of a sudden, I mean, it's in real life too.
Yep. She could call.
Right. I mean, so been used a lot.
Well, I think it's been used a lot on the Lifetime Network, I have to say. Yeah. Well, I tend to agree with your mom, Tim, because not only did I not find it scary other than the scene with the contortionist, but I feel like there were so many plot holes that when I start, like, here's the thing, like, obviously I can suspend disbelief for like supernatural movies and watch them and still enjoy them and still get scared by them. But when a movie's going on and there's just so many things that aren't making sense that it takes me out of the movie, then it's not working for me. What did you think, Tim?
I think, because you and I saw the movie together, I think we were bored. Our popcorn was more interesting. Our cherry cokes were more the focus. You know, but I did like the 2 minutes of the film where the nanny came clean and she said that she had the hots for her employer and she then slit her throat. I was like, you know what? This movie has something. And that's it.
No, that you're right. That was a good scene. And the contortionist scene was good again. But the contortionist scene, I feel like it could have been its own short film because it
had
this one.
What in that costume, you know, it kind of has stripes.
Yes. And, you know, they're using that for the trailer and for posters and everything. Yeah. And so they obviously know that that's the scariest part of the movie. I just feel like it wasn't well thought out. But the thing is, it could have been, because when you think about it, someone who draws creepy characters for comics, that already sounds scary, but
it wasn't executed well.
Yeah. I feel bad for Janine from The Handmaid's Tale because I think she's a good actress.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
That she would be, but I just don't think the script material was up to her level.
Exactly. What did you think of the little girl? Because Tim, I know you love child actors.
I do not like child actors at all.
So did she scare you, Tim?
No, I think it scared me that another movie was made with child actors. Leave them out.
Leave them out. It is, you know, I've got to say, so I guess we are all saying together that we would not recommend people trek out to the movie theater to see this movie, right?
Unless you're like Patsy and she can take that kind, you know, because it's not that scary and she can go and just enjoy a movie.
Yeah.
So what my mom's saying is that it's just a night out.
Yeah. So meaning if you see this movie not really thinking it's a horror movie, then it's fine.
Yeah.
So yeah. Mom, what was it? When I first spoke to you, what was your first response? You said it was just average, right?
C minus. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, C minus.
I mean, I wouldn't go any lower because they do have some effects in it, mm-hmm. you know, and I like that. And we haven't been out in years, it seems. And so, yeah, I mean, we were in a theater. We were had our feet up on one of those neat chairs, you know, and eating popcorn. I mean, what could go wrong with that?
So basically, just being in the theater gave it the higher grade.
Absolutely.
I love that. I actually think C minus is a pretty good grade for this because I was almost going to say D plus maybe. You know, but again, I've had movies where I've been so bored, I just want to walk out. And this one, at least I was, you know, it kept me watching, even though I knew it was the babysitter, I knew where it was going and it wasn't scary. There were times when I was like, okay, I can at least enjoy this movie. So,
yeah.
Tim, okay. How do you feel?
I agree 110%. I was happy to be there. Happy to see a movie. I was happy to see a movie. I think that should be on the poster. Happy to be seen in a movie.
Come see this movie because you'll enjoy being in a movie theater.
Yes. Absolutely.
That is a selling point.
I do miss that.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry that we didn't give you a better movie to go see, Darlene. There are a lot of great horror movies that are supposed to be coming out over the next few months. So, you know,
maybe. Yeah, but Patsy has to go with me and, you know, it has to be kind of, because my husband's not going to go. I mean, that's the way it is. And I don't like to go to the movie by myself.
I can definitely tell our listeners we won't be doing a Father's Day episode with our dads because neither of our dads like horror movies, right, Tim? Yeah,
that would be a...
We'll have to do your sister and my brother.
Yeah, we could do for... Is there Siblings Day? I'm not even sure.
That'd be fun. Yeah, that'd be good.
Well, Darlene, I just want to thank you so much for being on the podcast with us and talking about this kind of stinker of a movie with us and going out to see it.
Oh, it was so much fun. In this, I was almost like, you know, I was back in school, you know, and I had to critique a movie. I've done that. I mean, in college, that's what I did, you know, for an English class. So, yeah.
Look at that. Well, we have like a real movie reviewer because Tim and I are very not formal about anything.
Well, it was a, you know, in college class.
She's got a book of notes here, but you know what? There wasn't that much to say about the movie. So there you go. Well,
yeah.
I had to get it in my mind because I'm older.
Well, is there anything you want to add that you didn't get to add? I want to make sure with all those notes that you got to say what you wanted to say.
Nope, I think we covered it.
You're like, there's literally nothing else to cover for this movie. Well, look, I hope you guys have a great, great Mother's Day. I'm so glad that Tim could be with you for this day. Maybe, Tim, maybe you can show her a better horror movie since you're there with her.
I know, I'll try to show her something good. Because this movie, Separation, will not keep us separated. Okay.
Are you going to separate yourself from remembering this movie?
It was forgotten as I was watching it.
Oh, and there you have it, everyone. Okay, well, happy Mother's Day. It was nice seeing you, Darlene. And thanks so much for the podcast.
That was fun.
Okay, take care. Okay, bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and many other platforms.
If you'd like to stay updated on the podcast, please like and follow our Happy Horror Time page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
To contact us, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your movie recommendations or any horror stars you'd like us to interview.
To support the podcast and gain access to our bonus episodes, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime and sign up to be a patron. We try to release at least one bonus episode per month and really appreciate the support.
Before we go, I just want to give a major shout out to our co-producer, Jacob Randall, without whom this podcast wouldn't be possible. Please check out his true crime podcast. It's called Crime of Your Life, where he examines obscure and unsolved criminal cases and mysteries. It's incredibly engaging for both true crime lovers or just anyone who loves a good mystery. So we highly recommend Crime of Your Life.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert.
And thanks again for listening to Happy Horror Time.